Yeah, you know, I am tremendously blessed that my story is laden with setbacks that, you know, I've grown to learn that there's really no temptation, there's no setback, there's no traumatic story that is unique to any of us. I mean, the details might be unique, but really, everyone goes through an element of suffering. It's how we deal with suffering that determines the outcome and the impact that we have on others. And so for me, no different than many people that are probably listening, I have a story of setback to comeback to setback to comeback. I always say, when you have a setback, don't take a step back, but get ready for your comeback. Because sometimes a setback is actually the way God sets you up to rethink, reboot, recalibrate, or even reinvent your life.
Welcome to Linda's Corner, where we bring more hope, healing, and happiness to the world. My name is Linda Bjork, and today we're going to be talking about turning setbacks into comebacks. I'm delighted to welcome Stacey Wallace. Stacey is a best-selling author, keynote speaker, singer, entrepreneur, the CEO of the Fueled by Fire Mastery Program, and the founder of Empower Women, a nonprofit that seeks to bring freedom to women and girls overcoming abuse, domestic violence, homelessness, depression, and sexual exploitation. You can reach Stacey at her websites, stacywallace.com and emwomen.com, and I'll include those links in the show notes. Welcome, Stacey. I'm so glad that you could join with me today.
I'm so excited to be here. It's going to be a good one.
It is. It is going to be a good one. And I'm so excited to be able to have this conversation. And I have been thinking about you because as I read through your bio, as I checked out both of your websites, and I read through the testimonials, and I watched your TED Talk, I thought, is this woman for real? Is she superhuman? Is she a robot? I mean, how is it possible that one person can have that much talent, that much drive, that much success in such a broad variety of topics? Like, oh, yes, I'm a martial arts expert. Oh, yes, I'm also a basketball star. Oh, yes. And I'm an award-winning singer, and I performed off-Broadway, and I run my own fashion consulting firm, and I've shared the stage with five U.S. presidents, and I've been the marketing director of a billion-dollar company, and on and on and on, and that's the tip of the iceberg. What the heck? But then, Stacey, the thing that really caught my attention was when I read your story about the things that you have overcome. That made you real to me. And I've heard it said that we can impress people with our accomplishments, but we influence people through our weaknesses. And so I appreciate that you're not only willing to share your successes, which are many, and I am impressed, but I also appreciate that you're willing to be vulnerable and talk about the things that you've overcome so that you can influence others so that they can be successful as well. So would you please be willing to share your story about cystic fibrosis and dealing with abusive relationships and that addiction that was kind of new to me of that approval and needing that? So I turn the time to you.
Yeah, you know, I am tremendously blessed that my story is laden with setbacks that, you know, I've grown to learn now, I'm 53 years old, and I've grown to learn that there's really no temptation, there's no setback, there's no traumatic story that is unique to any of us. I mean, the details might be unique, but really, everyone goes through an element of suffering. It's how we deal with suffering that determines the outcome and the impact that we have on others. And so for me, no different than many people that are probably listening, I have a story of setback to comeback to setback to comeback. I always say, when you have a setback, don't take a step back, but get ready for your comeback. Because sometimes a setback is actually the way God sets you up to rethink, reboot, recalibrate, or even reinvent your life. And so for me, at an early age, when I was just a baby, I was diagnosed with pneumonia over and over and over again. And I was a very sick baby until they finally diagnosed me because my lungs kept filling up with fluid with a disease called cystic fibrosis. Now, today there are therapies that can help people sustain life. But back then, I'm 53, so there weren't the same therapies they have today. So generally a child would die as an infant with cystic fibrosis. But I had a praying mom and dad. My dad was a pastor. My grandpa was a pastor and had a missionary college, raised up missionaries and sent them around the world. And they believed in the power of prayer. And so they took me to the church, prayed for me. That next day forward, I never had another sign of pneumonia or cystic fibrosis. So the doctors called it a modern day miracle, which is wonderful, but there's a lot of people who don't experience that same outcome. Well, what about me? I didn't get a miracle. What about me? My marriage didn't get repaired. What about me? I didn't have a billion-dollar company. My company failed. And it's important that in those setbacks and comebacks and setbacks that you're real, raw, and relevant about what are the emotions going through them. Now, obviously, as a baby, I don't remember that. I am reminded by my parents of that miracle. But fast forward through we do something called a timeline experience where we do deep inner trauma healing for people who are both impoverished and suffering financially, as well as people who are 8-9 figures, because suffering is not prejudicial against socioeconomic classes. It hits everyone. And I believe that at an early age, God allowed me to have a lot of trauma, a lot of setbacks. Through divorce at an age of 21. I was nominated for New Female Country Music of the Year, married a rodeo cowboy. It was an abusive relationship. I went through suicidal depression. He left me before that. That's what sent me into suicidal depression. And I just felt like my life was over. And what I didn't realize then, that now looking back, I know, it's that very season of abuse and trauma that I went through that birthed M Women Today, which is Empowering Women, our nonprofit organization for women and girls. Had I not have had that setback, it wouldn't have enabled me to think clearly about how to stage a comeback for other women. And today we're obviously expanded beyond women. We're women and men. And that is even in the setbacks of business. I've been through 7 recessions. Not every recession feels good. And coming through them, though, at the end of each recession, because of very specific lessons, strategies, methods that I've put into place with my husband, we've been able to come back stronger after every setback, after every recession, loss of family members, diagnosis. They're just momentary blips on the radar of our human existence that God wants to turn all things, even the seemingly worst things, around for good when we're on purpose. And so, Linda, that's why we say inside of our company that we help CEOs, thought leaders, influencers, and business owners build purpose-driven, faith-based, highly profitable lives and businesses that create generational wealth and kingdom impact.
And that's huge. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. Now, as you're talking through some of your story, I think it's very wonderful that you brought up some points that this idea of trauma is not just for someone who is in a low income. This is for anyone and everyone. And I really appreciate, I know we're going to talk about this some more, maybe now is the time, but when we rescue women and we rescue boys and girls from the sex trafficking, horrible, horrible plague we have going on in this world, that physical rescue is not enough. It is not the end. Because even though their body might be safe at this moment, that trauma impacts the way that they feel about themselves and the way that they feel about the world. And until that is addressed, they're not truly free. And that example of the horrific things that many people go through, everyone goes through on some level or another. And that our traumas may be very different, whether it's abuse and on a physical or a sexual nature, or whether it is something that we misunderstood when we were children. We have events that happen in our lives, and then we have meanings that we attach to those events. Oh, I was raped. That means that I am dirty. I am worthless, I am unlovable, or something of that kind of nature. And so when we can uncover, where did that come from? Why do I feel that way? And then how do I let go of those feelings? I like that you do a timeline and go through and say, okay, this happened and this happened. So when we're, let's say I've gone through a timeline and I found some of these events that have really defined me, that they've hurt me to my core. And now that I've discovered it, can you give me some ideas of how to let that go? How to take that meaning off that event? So it's just, you know what? That happened. And now I can move on.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that trafficking is an interesting word. It's a very popular word right now that, and a lot of people are raising money around trafficking. Obviously, we've got some amazing movies that are bringing light to something that's been happening for a long time. But it's not just women and girls and children that are being sex trafficked. Trafficking has been around since the beginning of time. If you believe in scripture and you believe in Adam and Eve was trafficked. So there was a voice, there was the serpent that came and pulled Eve away for a moment and put her in a state of shame. And it's interesting that for the rest of history, humans have been trafficked. They've been trafficked emotionally. They've been trafficked spiritually. They've been trafficked financially. We sell our talent in order to make pay. And so trafficking is I call it a spirit, but it's an interesting thing to study at a higher level than the ability to compartmentalize. Well, that's something that happens in third world countries, or that's something that happens when somebody is stolen away for sex trade. But the truth is, at some point, every person has been trafficked by a boss, by a parent, by a friend. And when I say traffic, manipulated, the narcissistic spirit that comes to kill, steal, and destroy your joy, your peace, your happiness. And so the truth is, we've got to go much deeper than just thinking, I need to give some money to help people rescue. Although we do, we're very, very much involved in rescue and redemption of what people think typically of trafficking. But I've got women who are worth millions and millions of dollars, married to narcissistic husbands who ask them to do things that they are not wanting to do, having all kinds of things going on in manipulation inside the marriage that are just as trafficked as a child who, or a woman who is being trafficked, who now chooses trafficking. Same with men. I've noticed some men that are very, we have a lot of men. My husband is very much over the men's area of our nonprofit, that they have sold themselves for corporate America their entire life, and they've lost their identity. They've left their home. They're no longer fathers or husbands. And now they're living, and many of them, couch potatoes, serving games online. And yet, huge talent, abilities, and giftings. So Linda, when we think of trafficking, when you talk about trauma, you can go to Sunday church, sit down on any seat in that church, and you'll be sitting with people who are emotionally disturbed, who are carrying trauma. They smile, they might lift their hands in worship, but on the inside, who do they talk to? Who do they connect with? So we talk about in our programs, both our nonprofit and our for-profit, we have a very high ticket for-profit company. We work with very successful 6, 7, 8 figure CEOs and thought leaders. And we help them not only build profitability in their company, but we focus on what we call the 7 F words: faith, family, finance, fitness, focus, freedom, and fun. Because we know an unsound leader is a dysfunctional leader. And so when you have someone, to your question about how do you begin to uproot that? Well, number one is to identify where it came from. The fact that you have a timeline isn't enough. Identifying what's on your timeline isn't enough. Identifying, for example, that his father left when he was one. So my husband had an abandonment or an orphaned spirit ever since he was a little boy. Well, we've got to go back. Where did that come from? Because it's not about his dad. Somehow his dad was traumatized. that made him become a fatherless father, made him become an abandoner. So when you go into the father, you realize his father was orphaned as a little boy. And you go before him, his father was orphaned. So there was an orphan spirit passed down called generation. Many people call it generational curses, that if you just try to fix your timeline and you can't figure out, why do I keep having depression? Why do I keep feeling like I get two steps forward and three steps back? Why does it feel like I'm going and all of a sudden I'm doing really good? And then it's like, I've got a hook in my back and this fishing pole that goes and pulls me back right where I was. It's because we got to go back even further and go, what caused me to become the leader I am, making the choices I make today? Had somebody has had 23 affairs. The wife came to us searching, loves her husband. We need help. Well, where does that come from? It's not enough to identify the affairs. We got to go back and go, where did that person open themselves up to trauma that now, because hurting people hurt people. And when we go back, it's incredible. The first step is one, identification. And so when you identify, this isn't something I chose, this is something that has been passed down. Now, you might have made some with a girl that was got drunk, woke up, didn't know where she was, woke up and had lost her virginity. So there's some choices that we might make that put us in a dangerous circumstance. It doesn't mean we're to blame, but what it does mean is we need to take responsibility. If we always blame our boss, or we blame our husband, or we blame our wife, or we blame our children for our emotional instability, we have lost control because we can't control them. But the day we take responsibility and say, you know what, I can't control what happened to me, but I can take control of what happens now. And when we take responsibility, now we're in power. If we are a victim, we are powerless. And it is like the suck zone of emotional quotient to live in a powerless moment. So if you can imagine for a second, I like to call it a four-stage process to turning your scars into stars that light the way for others. So if we look at what happened to you in your history, in your timeline, and maybe we go back and go, wow, I'm not mad anymore because I realized that my dad was abandoned too. And his dad was an abandoner. So it wasn't that I need to hate on my dad anymore because really he didn't know any better. Or that abuser. I think of I know a lot of people don't like to hear this, but we help abusers because we want to go back and go, where did that spirit of abuse start? What gave you the license to think that that was okay? Well, it usually goes back to somewhere before them. But once we identify that and we go, okay, we have seven layers of forgiveness that we talk about, which will have to be another podcast. But when you identify, yes, like you said, yes, this happened to me. Okay. It happened to me. It's information. It doesn't mean that it's worse than somebody else's. It's more trauma than we may think it is, but really it's just trauma. Information. Now I can live in historical information for the rest of my life and never gain the value of what happened to me. The abuse, the cystic fibrosis, being taken advantage of, being corporate trafficking. I've gone through a lot of things in my life where I could just live in a state of depression because of what happened to me. Or I can surrender my past. I like to call it seed planting. Instead of continually delving on it, say, you know what? My past is worth $3 million or $300 million of pain. And instead of holding on to it and looking at it every day, I'm going to take that seed and I'm going to let it go. I'm going to bury it into a season of transformation. And I'm going to say, God, if you can still use me, use me. But I'm going to give you my past. And you give up the past. And there's actually a scripture that says, how can a seed bear fruit unless first it dies? It has to go in the ground. You have to cover it up, put it in a dark space, and let it germinate into something better than it is by itself. That's what we call season two. So season one is information. Season two is transformation. Transformation only happens if you untether your relationship emotionally, spiritually, and physically to the past. So there's a number of methods we use for untethering. But when you do, you're able to release that past and say, okay, once and for all, I want to put this into the ground of transformation. As transformation, that's where you get healings, where you get therapy, that's where you go into coaching programs, that's where you get outside influence helping you make better choices. As you go, for people who are heavily caught in addiction, this is where you need scaffolding, tight scaffolding. If you're erecting a new building, scaffolding are the people, the coaches, the church, the infrastructures around you that are going to hold you accountable to the new life that you want to live. And you can't expect it to happen overnight, right? It's like a bamboo tree. It's not going to grow up overnight. You got to be consistent. That's why we don't do any programs less than 12 months, because we know we want to have, now somebody can take one of our courses, but our programs are all 12 months and beyond, because we know we need 12 months to grow that bamboo tree. We need 12 months to really hit those critical spots that they've tried over and over and over again in order to get the outcomes that we get. The third season from information to transformation is then duplication. When you get into duplication, it's because now you're bearing fruit. So you've taken the seed, you've planted it into transformation. Now it's starting to come up and your tree is starting to bear good fruit that other people want. They want to read your book. They want to be on your podcast. They want to hear your stories, because now your pain has become a source of power that other people can glean from. This is usually where we get people saying, I want to start my online coaching program. I want to write my book. I want to be able to expand my team. I'd like to be able to increase the infrastructure of our company so we can hire more people and put more food on the table for other people. So now you're into duplication. But the fourth stage, which is really important because it's how you now turn around and create an ecosystem of change, is monetization. So information is your past, your pain, transformation, duplication, so that you can eventually take what you've learned and turn it into something that is monetizable, monetization. And that's where we begin to help you with the infrastructure and the tools that you need, Facebook ads and the digital marketing, the AI, all the things that are available to us today on the planet to be able to create an economy of change versus just a hoping and any. We always say a dream without a plan of action is nothing but wishful thinking. We want to help people get into that plan of action.
That's absolutely beautiful. So by creating this framework, you're saying that I can go through something horrible. This is my setback. This is the thing that has just destroyed me. And I can take it and I can turn it around and actually use it into something that not only I get to heal, I get to help others, and I get to create a business and be able to even, you know, live off of the experiences that I have had and to be able to make that growth. And that is absolutely beautiful as you put all those things together. So if I'm pulling out just a couple little points from, to go back to my question of, okay, now I found my thing, what do I do with it? One important aspect you mentioned is that I have to take responsibility. And it doesn't mean that I take responsibility for the bad thing that happened, but I do have to take responsibility for my response, for the way that I internalized it and from what I thought that it meant to me. And I think that's a very important step that not everybody is willing to go there, because it's easier to stay in a victim mentality. It is easier to say, there's nothing I can do about it. It's easier to say, you know, I'm helpless, and to just stay where we are, and to take that step of accepting responsibility helps to be able to move the wheels forward so that we can do everything else that needs to take place. And that is absolutely amazing.
Linda, here's the thing is when you mentioned the addiction that I had up until about 40 years old was an approval addiction. Everybody has some type of an addiction, a demigod, whatever you want to call it in their life, that they've made more important than their calling. And what that means is when you are really aligned with your calling, your past is nothing but it's actually an asset to you. The stories that you've gone through, the failures that you've overcome, somebody else needs what you've got. So it becomes an asset. But if you are still holding on to the pain of your past, it's now become a liability. So you want to live building infrastructure, companies, families, teenagers. You want to build on assets But you, in order to do that, you've got to release the liabilities. We do something called the Smart Money Makeover, where we help people get out of debt, house paid for, cars paid for, and live in a state of abundance so that they can become what we call kingdom stewards, meaning they're stewarding everything that God has given them instead of feeling like I've got to get owning something. But in order to have a life of assets, you've got to identify where are your liabilities? Where are you bleeding? Right? Where's the money flowing out that you need to stop the gap? The same as emotionally. We've got to identify, is that thought I'm having right now an asset or a liability? And if we continue to go back to the trauma and we feed on it, we talk about it, we get with our girlfriends and we're still talking about what he did or what she did, it has become a liability because that is not good. It's not lovely. It's not health producing. It's not about your future. It's about your past. And that's why it's important to have scaffolding. People say, hey, wait a minute. We already talked this. It's in the ground. Didn't you plant that in the ground? Let's talk about your next season. So most people talk about what happened to me and they look backwards instead of looking, what's going to happen to me tomorrow? And what do I need to do in order to get there?
That is so important. And I appreciate that you brought up the comment that just that rehashing it over and over and over, that is another common mistake that I've seen. I've even seen it in a group therapy situation where the purpose of the meeting instead of healing is to validate. Mm-hmm. I am validating why I have been so hard done to and why I should be angry and why life is unfair and why, and on and on and on, rather than letting that go and truly letting it go. And that takes, I think, some humility. And it also takes some strength to be able to say, I do not require this to define me or to validate me. I am okay letting it go and moving forward. Now, I do have a question. Did you ever find a source or a reason behind the approval addiction where that came from?
I'm a performer. I'm an overachiever. My personality, if you do Enneagram, I'm an 8-wing 7. I'm a shark. If you go after the ocean life, I'm a shark dolphin. My personality growing up, I was in a very driven family of faith. I grew up on Zig Ziglar. You know, everything's positive. And when I was a little girl, I wanted to play basketball. So my dad taught me the 1% method. And the 1% method, while it's a method we use today to really help scale massive vision, if you're doing it through the filter of ego, it becomes a source of validation and acceptance. And so every day in basketball, I wasn't good when I got started in fourth grade. I couldn't get the ball up to the rim. So my dad would say, baby, you're tiny. You're going to have to outplay, outpractice, and outwit those other players. So when they would practice for an hour, I would stay and practice for 2 hours. When they would shoot 10 free throws, I wouldn't go in until I made 10 free throws. And so the martial arts, becoming a black belt in martial arts, everything that I did it to the point of excellence that eventually became, if I wasn't number one, I didn't feel good enough. And so I moved into a performance culture that I had to perform to get the atta girls, perform to get the good jobs, perform to get the applause of being on top. And that went on for most of my life till I was 40. And I've sung for 5 U.S., traveled with Zig Ziglar, shared the stage with 5 U.S. presidents, sung at the Olympics. I mean, everything, inaugural prayer breakfast, I sung at the inaugural prayer breakfast. I've spoken on stages that people would only dream about, but it was never enough. It was like enough was never enough. And you even when you read the bio, it was like, how does this one person? Because I was driven for applause. I wasn't driven for the money, even though I made a lot of money. I wasn't driven because of food on the table. I was driven, my ether, my addiction was approval. And when I hit 40, I knew I have achieved so much in life at 40. I went away for 7 days and I fasted and I prayed and I meditated up in a condo up in Branson, Missouri. And I just kept saying, God, this has been an amazing 40 years. I could end it now. And everybody, it's amazing life. But I want my next 40 to be even better than my last 40. Break me. Break down anything. I ended up hiring a very expensive coach. And the first session, the onboarding session, this coach who is very, very well known, we did one-on-one, and he said, wow, it's really amazing. Started going through the accolades of all I had done. And I said, listen, let me stop you. I do not want you to tell me what I've done good. I want you to pick apart what's broken. And I gave him permission to do an open gurney, like open heart surgery. Look at me as a leader. What is sabotaging me from being able to have the next level of effectiveness? And that is when we begin to identify why I perform at a high level, why I'm so passionate about world change, and why I would be willing to say that I'm going to be celibate the rest of my life and go to India and save the world. It was not about saving the world. It was about the approval I would get if I saved the world. And so there was a micro distinction of that behavior versus a true, authentic love. And when it is self-driven, when it is ego-driven, it's narcissistic. It means that it's all about you. It's not really about others. You'll make it look like it's about others, but really it's about you. When God broke me of that, and in 2017, he had my husband and I, when we were in the peak of our financial career, give everything, every penny we had away, give away all our money to the poor, went 9 months without a vehicle. That season of our life, we'll have to talk about that on another podcast, radically changed our life and broke us into a place of true humility, of loving people, being willing to serve people. 2.5 years we did that. Didn't go back into the corporate America. My husband and I both walked away from our corporate positions, and we worked with the homeless and we worked with the poor, and we learned what it's like to really see through the filter of love to people who are not like you, to people who don't smell like you, and to be able to serve them at the highest level right where they're at. And today, 2020, when we started Fueled by Fire, we knew that we were going to build an elite program for people who are hungry to create impact in the world and not just have success, but to have meaningful significance.
That is amazing. Thank you for sharing that. That gives another piece of the puzzle of to how things are. So now, rather than being motivated by the applause and having me say, wow, you did such a great job, is there a better source that we can turn to help us feel not only accomplished, but fulfilled? Because it sounds like even though you were very accomplished, you weren't fulfilled. Or at least if you were, it was until the applause stopped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, very good observation. To everybody else, I look like the life that everybody wanted to live. But again, enough is never enough. And I didn't understand the difference between purpose and role. And so, you know, people are always saying, I'm trying to find my purpose. And I've worked with thousands and thousands of women who, you know, they say that men in the marketplace, I just want to know what my purpose is. And so what they're confused with is they think that their job is their purpose. So they ascribe value to the accolades they get in the job. They think their children are their purpose. So they ascribe value as long as the children are good. They ascribe purpose to the role that they're playing. And what I mean by that is if a mom thinks that her purpose is to be a good mom and to raise the kids, then what happens when those kids don't need mom anymore cooking and cleaning? They leave the house, they get married. Now you have a mom who's depressed because she's an empty nester. And she says, I just don't know what my purpose is anymore, because she thought her children were her purpose. Purpose is much bigger than the role that you play in any distinct season of your life. Purpose is the reason why God has you on this planet. So for me, I do a lot of roles. I mean, I'm leading multiple companies. I'm an investor in multiple companies. I've got real estate, 62-acre property out here that we do transitional living. I've got nonprofit. Those are all roles. Not a single one of them define me. What defines me is my purpose. And I believe our purpose is all the same. And that is that God has us on this planet to reflect his love and his glory. And if we can do that, whether we're working at Walmart, we can do that if we're a mom, we can do that if we are at church, we can do that if we are in a 5K running with a bunch of other people. Doesn't matter what role you play, your role gives you significance in the marketplace. Your purpose gives you significance in the kingdom of heaven. looking and saying, are you doing what you do with the purpose of love being back behind everything that you do? And now I don't have to be so caught up in what role I'm playing. I don't have to be caught up in being number one. I can be number 17 and still fulfill my purpose to be a God-loving, God-caring woman that cares for other people as much as I care for myself. I can be a janitor at McDonald's and fulfill God's purpose of being his light, because I'm probably going to come across somebody that's going to walk into one of my bathrooms and I'm going to say, oh, I'm sorry, let me slip out. I hope you have a blessed day. And I slip out and I just let a little sprinkle of love go into that bathroom. And then I go back in and I start sweeping again. That's a huge micro distinction that leads people to something we call peace and profits. It's no longer about performance. It's about fulfillment of the one calling on your life, your divine purpose, and do that daily.
I love that purpose. Our purpose is to love. Mm-hmm. And we can do that in any role we play. And I liked the variety of roles that you gave examples of, that it doesn't matter if it's something that the world considers insignificant, we can show love. And I liked the example that you had of a mother, because I think that role is one where we have a lot of opportunities to share love, and that can help make the next generation better and create a beautiful foundation. Stacy, this has been delightful, and I thank you for visiting with me today.
Thank you.
Is there anything that you want to make sure that we cover before we close?
No, I just invite, you know, we do a 5-day free, it's called Legacy Wealth Mastery at fbfchallenge.com. I just encourage everyone, come, and if you like this show, we dive deep into some of these principles, as well as the strategies I use to help people get unlocked. So if you go to FBF, which stands for Fueled by Fire, fbfchallenge.com, you can get registered for our next 5-day mastery course. It's absolutely free. And I look forward to being there with you, as well as, you know, you can check out more stuff on stacywallace.com. But really, that challenge, we want to give free as many people as possible so that they can experience the life change that we've been blessed to see so many people experience.
Thank you. And I'll make sure to include that link in the show notes as well. In closing, I'd like to share a quote by Zig Ziglar. He said, "How many people are completely successful in every department of life? Not one. The most successful people are the ones who learn from their mistakes and turn their failures into opportunities." Today, I invite our listeners to turn your failures into opportunities and your setbacks into comebacks. See you next time on Linda's Corner.
Thanks for listening. Please share and subscribe to help us reach new listeners. And if you'd like to heal your life from the inside out, there is a free video series at hopeforhealingfoundation.org. Just click on the free stuff tab. I also invite you to grab a copy of one of my books, like Crushed, A Journey Through Depression, and You Got This, an action plan to calm fear, anxiety, worry, and stress. See you next time on Linda's Corner.